Welcome in to the best in paranormal programming. This is Darkness Radio. I'm Tim Dennis. I'm excited about today's program, folks. A longtime friend is on the program today, and we are going to get down to the nitty-gritty. And as a matter of fact, his new book, Tales of an Exorcist, has a slight mention of a little piece of history between the two of us. I'll get to it in just a second and let you know what that is. In fact, I got a funny story about this particular piece of history between the two of us. I was just thinking about it as I was reading his book over the last couple of days. Bill Bean is our guest today. And Bill was born on July 29th, 1966 in Baltimore, Maryland. He was 4 years old when his parents relocated the family to a three-bedroom rancher in a small town called, Bill, how do you pronounce the name of this town? Is it
Herondale?
Herondale, that's right.
Yeah.
What his family didn't know at that time was that the house was already occupied by demonic forces, and that's where the entire journey takes off. We're going to bring Bill in now and talk a little bit about family history. We're going to talk a little bit about destiny as well, and exactly what brought him to this destiny of facing off against demonic forces. Ladies and gentlemen, let's bring in, let's just call him what it is, the spiritual warrior, Bill Bean. How you doing, Bill?
I'm doing great, brother. Thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure to be on with you.
Well, I appreciate you, brother. I really do. You know, I mentioned that there's a little piece of history between you and I, and I'm honored to be only one of two wrestling organizations to have brought you in to have a match. Let's start off with this first before we get to the family history. I'm reading the book, and it mentions in there that you've had unusual experiences, one of only being that you'd had two wrestling matches in your career. And I smiled when I saw that, being IWI, being one of the organizations right. You've been in. And it brought me back to a memory that got me laughing. And I'll see if you remember this. Before your match ever started, you're in the ring and you're practicing forearms.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. And you were, I'm going to draw a parallel here for you. Okay. And it's the enthusiasm you have for everything you do in life.
Yeah.
Okay. So you get in there, and I'm standing there with a couple of the boys, and we're watching you as you get in there. The first couple of forearms you threw, because you were so excited and you were so happy to be there, had so much force behind them. It was like hearing the kick drum of Alex Van Halen. You could hear these forearms, and they, in all fairness, Ian Xavier, who is the owner and promoter, told you, lay it in there hard, because it's better to lay it in there hard than to throw it too soft, because you don't want it to be the drizzling shits, pardon my language. You want it to look good, right?
Yeah.
You remember him telling you that?
I do remember it.
Okay, so you threw it in there, but it sounded like you were caving this kid's chest in, right? And all of us were going, ooh, 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 and the first few you threw, and then Ian went, stop. And he came over and he went, Bill, you can lighten it up just a little bit.
I remember.
Yeah.
And I was, you know, again, you're right, Tim. That was, you know, looking back with that, oh, that would have been the last thing that I wanted. But again, at the same time, when you get the adrenaline going in there and then somebody's telling you to lay it in,
mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, I thank God. Nothing bad came from that.
No, but you were doing what you were told, which was good.
Yeah.
But it was just, and I remember somebody saying to me, if he lays it in like that during the match, he's going to kill us all. but what was funny about that was the fact that, one, you had a better body than half the guys on the roster. I'll just put it that way. And I'm not saying that in a weird way. I'm saying that in the fact that, I mean, you're a big guy, you're physically fit, and you're looking good, one, looking good, but two, you're backing it up, right? So, I mean, you look pretty much, you know, as good as the champ we had at that time, and you're just as strong, okay? So, but then you're throwing it with good force, right? You're throwing the forearm with good force, and I'm going, wow, that's a nice shot. But the area that you're throwing the area where you're throwing the forearm to, you're not really supposed to, you don't really feel that force as most of us know. So, boy, you're throwing good shots. And I went, oh, God, that looks like it hurts.
I remember another thing that I did, too. And I said, Ian said, oh, wait a minute. So when the forearms were coming in, I guess I just reverted because I boxed, I wrestled, did mm-hmm. martial arts, all those kinds of things, power lifter. And I did a combination, a body combination coming up with fists. He said, whoa, wait a minute, wait a minute. And I had to stop myself there because, again, you know, I'm getting into that, I guess, that mode of where it kind of bleeds into reality. And you have to be careful because, man, that could be not a good result.
But I do want to tip my cap to you because when we got into the ring for that match, boy, it was automatic. You got in there and it kicked in, the athleticism kicked in, and you looked really good.
Thank you, brother. And I really felt, it felt natural to me. I can't explain it to you. And there were some people that came up to me after that and said, wow, how long have you been doing this? I said, oh, no, this, you know, wow, you look like you've been in there for years and all that. And mm-hmm. Somebody even, there was an article written, and in that article, it said something to that effect. But no, I didn't. The only training that I have is brief training with Dwayne Gill at the Monster Factory in Glen Burnie, Maryland. Mm-hmm. That was the only, and that was very brief. But it just felt natural to me, Tim. I don't know. It just, some things just come naturally to you.
Hey, it's the world famous Monster Factory, my friend. They've turned out a lot of famous wrestlers. So,
yes. Yeah. No, yeah. You're right. You're absolutely right. Yeah. I walked in off the street. And just one day walked in there and met Dwayne Gill. And the next thing you know, I'm signing a form and getting into the ring and started the flips, backing into the turnbuckle and flipping over and then taking clotheslines off the ropes mm-hmm. and the guy getting behind my legs as I'm being clotheslined over him and stuff like that. So that's how it all began in that world.
So yeah, so if you ever doubt that Bill doesn't do his job with passion, I can tell you he does everything with passion, folks.
It's true. I love everybody and I care about people, but I am intense. That's who I am. I can't help it. That's mm-hmm. just how I am. And my approach on life is an aggressive approach because of having this level. And I didn't choose to do this work, Tim, mm-hmm. as a mm-hmm. spiritual warrior.
Yep.
God chose me to do it. And so with that, I have a fury and a fierceness and a passion and an aggressiveness because I always have to keep the devil underfoot and I always have to be in control of every situation. And you can't do that if you're on your heels. So you got to be on your toes moving forward.
Very true. You know, let's talk a little bit about the book Tales of an Exorcist and what brought you to that, I guess, attitude of I don't want to say attitude of fierceness, but credo of fierceness and aggressiveness and bringing out that warrior spirit, that spiritual warrior type spirit. Because I guess I should say when you were young, it wasn't always that way, correct?
Yeah, I was a victim. You know, when I was a young boy, we moved into that house in 1970. I was 4 years old and I started having, my mother was the first to have an experience in there shortly after we had moved in. Mm-hmm. But I came under physical attack, regular physical attack from demonic entities in 1975. That's where it started. I was 5 years old. Mm-hmm. And so I would say between ages 5 through 12, I was having these attacks from demonic entities. My mother suffered far worse than I did. She suffered more than any other person I've ever seen in my life. Mm-hmm. Neither of my parents lived to see the age of 50. My mother died at age 44 from a cerebral hemorrhage. My father was shot to death at age 48. I've lost many other family members under strange and bizarre and tragic circumstances as well over the years. So I was very much a victim in my childhood, Tim. So once I was delivered, and it didn't happen until I decided for so many years with all the tragedies that took place and how we were overcome by those evil forces, I didn't even want to live. I didn't have a desire to live. I was seeking death, really. Wasn't going to slip my wrist or take pills, but I wanted somebody to kill me. I can assure you of that. And I lived my life on the edge for many, many years. Then I had an epiphany one day that maybe I did have a hope in the future and maybe I could do better. And I prayed about it. And I asked God to come into my life and I asked if he would help me, that I would certainly do my best to make him first in my life. And that's where things started to change. And it was not an overnight process. It was a gradual process because when we developed behavioral patterns. They are very difficult to break, especially when you're coming out of the fear-based, trauma-based way mm-hmm. of thinking and living. That is very difficult to break out of. And so it was two steps forward and three steps backward for a while until I got there. But once I got there, it was like it was removed from me, and it was like it all happened to somebody else. I was so far removed from it that I couldn't even fathom that that actually happened to me. And so that's where my life really was transformed. I felt that God was putting a calling on my life. And I started giving interviews about my story all the way back in 1996. And so I was talking about it then, but still being victimized in many ways. I still wasn't out of it yet.
Okay.
And once I finally, you know, God removed me from it, and I was sincere about making God first in my life, everything started to change. And I noticed a lot of blessings were coming into my life. And then I felt like God was putting a calling on my life. So even back when I started doing the interviews in 1996, people would send me messages telling me their stories and even asking for help. And I thought, I can't help these people. I'm still a victim myself. What am I going to do for these people? How can I help them in any way? But once I was delivered and transformed, then I understood it. I understood that God, and even the whole thing, Tim, the whole everything that happened, I believe it happened because God was preparing me for where I'm at right now in helping other people. And you cannot be a help to anybody, truly, unless you have been there yourself. Because when people suffer these types of traumas, They don't trust others. They don't want to talk about it because it's too painful to even go there. But in these situations now, in knowing that I have been there down all these dark and long and hard roads in life, they can trust me. So we can develop a bond because they know that I've been there. So God knows what he's doing. But in the beginning, I thought, God must have a sense of humor. Somebody like me, well, how am I going to be a help to anybody? So I resisted that call for a while until I couldn't resist it anymore. And then I started doing extensive studies, biblical studies, ancient history, ancient religion. I studied anything and everything. And then I had the confidence. I felt not only spiritually ready, but intellectually adequate and ready as well for the challenge. I became a non-denomination minister mm-hmm. and then started going out and helping these people. And I think the first case was in 2012. And then I'd say by 2014, I was traveling everywhere. I've helped people in 54 countries and counting. Wow. And that's God working through me. I'm nothing special. I'm just an instrument that God works through to help people. And I thank him and praise him for it. But it's really astounding, Tim, when I look back on this, and you remember me from the beginning, because mm-hmm. Before mm-hmm. I was a spiritual warrior, we did interviews, and then we had a friendship before that.
Yep.
So it's astounding to me how, looking back on all of that, where I was and where I'm at now, that is truly miraculous from God in working through me in that way. I mean, I'm so busy now, Tim, that my operation is almost like a 24/7 operation. Now people come to me for help from all over the world. And if I'm not going in person, then I do the sessions via Skype. Mm-hmm. And Skype is the next best thing to being there, because just like we were on a Zoom right now, mm-hmm. we are, even though we're not in the same room together, we're very much together. Oh, and yes. Yep. You know, having a dialogue is the same thing with those types of, sessions via Skype. And so nowadays I find myself 4:00 a.m, 5:00 a.m, 6:00 a.m. before I get to bed, I'm having sessions with people. It could be Australia, it could be the UK. I had a recent session with someone in Tunisia, Northern Africa.
Wow.
It could be anywhere, Pakistan, in places that you would think it's not possible for this guy to be having dialogue with peoples from these types of countries. But Egypt, Pakistan, you just wouldn't believe it. But that's what God does. He makes the impossible possible. And I can never thank him and praise him enough for that. And I deal with people that have a variety of issues. Yes, it could be demonic oppression. It could be possession. It could be substance abuse. It could be other addictions, dealing with severe depression. You name it. I have seen it, and God has worked through me to help people that have those types of afflictions.
Wow, that's amazing. Let me ask you, I want to rewind just slightly here, Bill, and mm-hmm. talk a little bit about that beginning period where you're starting to help yeah. people and you're getting yourself underfoot and getting started. Besides faith and the tools of faith and the tools of God giving you that confidence to go out there and defeat evil, what else is there that's helping you get that confidence to go out there and do it? Because let's face it, when we've been beaten down time after time after time, we can either be a whipped puppy or we can put our chest out there and we can go at it and be a warrior. And we've got to make that choice. There's got to be something in there that flips that switch. There had to be something in there that flipped that switch besides faith.
Thinking back on it, Tim, what comes to mind is 1979. I was 13 years old. I had just come back from a trip where I saw my, and I'm sorry to say, I very much hated my father for many, many years. Mm-hmm. I've since forgiven him. I love my father.
Yeah.
But he was a good man who made some terrible choices.
Okay.
And so during the years between 1973 and 1975, he had become a raging alcoholic who regularly physically abused my mother on many occasions. And I recall having to run to a neighbor's to get the police called on him at age eight, you know, just terrible, mm-hmm. terrible things. And so he left us in 1975 I was age nine. And so the two closest people to me in my life at that time after his departure were my mother and her mother, my grandmother, Harvey. And so we've gone to this trip because my little brother he loved my dad unconditionally. I still very much hated him. We went to Florida when he left us, he moved to Florida. Mm-hmm. We went there for a visit. My father's brother, older brother, Uncle Clifford, was a devout Christian. He's no longer with us. But devout Christian, pillar of the community. It's amazing how God works, because I didn't want to go on this trip. And I go there and I find myself sitting down with my uncle, and he is talking about faith. He is talking about how we can overcome the devil, all these things. Now, my parents believed in God, but we didn't go to church. We didn't have any faith-based background.
Okay.
So Uncle Cliff is telling me all these things, and I really took it to heart. So I think that's where it really started, with the planting of the seeds of faith. And little did I know, and this is amazing how God works like this. Right after returning from that trip, now this is 1979, I was 13 years old. Right after returning from that trip, the very same day, my mother ends up getting attacked. What had happened was, a lot of things had taken place while we were gone. One was the disappearance of our little poodle named Fuzzy. Never saw the dog again. So we were upset by that. Another thing that took place is there was a portrait, a painting of my sister when she was 3 years old. Innocent little girl in a blue dress, you know, and all of a sudden the painting had taken on a life of its own. Sinister. The mouth was downturned. The eyes looked like they'd come to life. Mm. Just a horrific thing. My mother took it off the wall, put it in the closet in the bedroom. So on that day, my mother had a new man in her life at that time named Richard. My grandmother was present, her mom. And my aunt, my mother's sister, and her boyfriend were coming over. They all wanted to see this painting that had turned, come to life, it turned sinister. So on that day, my brother had gone outside to play. I was still in the house. She goes down the hallway to the bedroom to retrieve the painting for everybody, to show it to everybody. It was during the course of that an unseen force picked her up by the back of her neck and threw her across the room in the air and she landed in her makeup table, and she was scratched, bruised, and then cut open from landing into the makeup table. And we went racing down there, and it was just, you would have had to have been there to understand what I'm saying to you. I mean, it was so, my mother was just so traumatized throughout her life and throughout the short time that I had with her. I mean, it was just nothing but suffering.
Yeah.
So we get her to her feet, Richard and I, and then something happened to him. For all those years, I was a scared little kid that was traumatized and victimized over and over and over again. Something snapped in me on that day, and I became enraged and fierce and so angered that, you know, all these things that happened to us. And I went in, I got out. And also at that point in time, for the last 16 months that we lived there, we had a priest involved that was coming to the house regularly, bringing mason jars full of holy water. And so I went and grabbed a Bible and a mason jar full of that holy water. And I, now looking back on it, I made a mistake, because when dealing with demonic forces, you should always be authoritative over them and bind and rebuke and cast them out, and also ask God's angels to come and take them into custody. Well, I didn't do that. On that day, I was commanding them to show themselves, which was not a good thing to do. But I was just so angry and so tired of all of it. I was demanding them to show themselves. So the adults, there were five adults there. I recall us going up the hallway. I was leading. They're behind me. And I'm commanding these things to show themselves. As we're going up the hallway, the doors are opening and slamming. It was like a mini earthquake taking place in the house. Things were falling off the walls. It was like right out of a horror film. But it was happening for real. The adults went into the dining room behind me. And I was in the living room, probably 10 feet in front of them. And at one point, I continued to command these things to show themselves. And at one point, several feet in front of me, four entities manifested, and they manifested in these beams of light. It was like these yellowish, greenish beams of light. And the first entity, we called the Undertaker. It didn't look like the wrestler, the Undertaker, but it did have a black suit, and it actually did wear a hat at times.
Really?
And it had chalky white skin too, but it wasn't, you know, I wouldn't say that it looked like the Undertaker character. Looked more like Abraham Lincoln, to be honest with you.
Huh.
And so this entity manifested, black hair, black beard, chalky white skin, black suit, and black eyes. And then another entity, and this was an entity that was regularly physically attacking my mother. An entity next to him, the entity had chalky white skin, close cropped, curly hair, red, a long scar down the side of his face, black eyes. Then the third entity was a female, had the look of a witch, long black gown, sharp facial features, chalky white skin, like dark, maybe brown, more dark brown than black hair. And then the fourth entity was the dark force entity that I call it, was a black hooded figure with glowing red eyes. The adults saw it. We saw it clearly, all of them, for several seconds, and then they just dissipated. It wasn't like they just suddenly vanished. They just dissipated like that. And when they all left, all the chaotic activity in the house stopped. And we ended up leaving there for the night. We went to Richard's house, stayed for a couple nights there, and then came back. But it was the beginning of the end after that. But that was my first battle with demonic forces. And I really believe that's where it started. And I think God was testing me to see if I could be who he wanted me and needed me to be as a spiritual warrior. Furthermore, Tim, looking even further back, I believe that he put this on me before I came into the world, because I'll tell you why. When I came into the world as a baby, something happened that is most perplexing. And this is the explanation that I got.
Okay.
I have a scar around my toe next to the baby toe on my right foot.
Okay.
And that was from my toe being severed as a baby. And they said that they had to sew that back on. And the explanation never made any sense to me. They said that a piece of hair from a nurse wrapped around the toe and that's what severed the toe. I just,
what?
I can't fathom that, but that's, and I still have a scar to this day. And then another thing happened to me at age 2. I had a major head injury. Supposedly this story, and I don't remember it. Supposedly I'm circling around this pole and it was like a column, and something, somehow my head struck something on that column, and it was a major deal. And they kept wrapping towel after towel after towel, you know, all my head was soaking all the towels full of blood. Mm-hmm. So I think that the devil was really trying to get rid of me from an early age, so I wouldn't be able to assume this role that God had bestowed upon me. And I've been in many life-threatening situations throughout my lifetime, and God has saved me every time, and I can never thank him and praise him enough for it. So I really believe, in looking back on all of this, that the devil was absolutely trying to kill me and stop me from being in this position.
Sounds like it.
Oh, crazy stuff. I mean, just absolute. I'm still trying to, you know, just think about that for a second. How is it that a piece of hair could actually sever? I just...
You'd have to have razor wire for hair. That's the only way that that could take out a baby's toe.
And another bizarre thing that happened that I never could get a clear explanation on is that my sister was born in 1957. Mm-hmm. There was another child born in 1963, a male child, and he died. And he died under mysterious circumstances. I got conflicting accounts, and now most of the family members are gone, so I can't even get anything anymore. But what I was told is that the child didn't live for very long, died under mysterious circumstances, and representatives of Johns Hopkins came and took the body away for studies.
Really?
So I contacted Johns Hopkins to try and get to the bottom of it. They said, oh, we don't have those records anymore.
How would you not have records of a study?
Something that, and again, that's all I know. And this is another interesting thing, Tim, and I've never discussed this with you before, but I haven't discussed any of these things with you before. Mm-hmm. That would have been my mother's first male child in 1963. My sister was pregnant, and her first male child died inside of her, and she almost died as well. And I find that very interesting, that my mother's first male child died, and then my sister's first male child died. And then my mother died 10 years to the day of my aunt, who was the wife of my Uncle Clifford that I mentioned, about Christian.
Yep.
She died while giving birth. And supposedly it was like a blood poisoning or something that left a medical instrument inside of her or something. And she died from sepsis. And that was on October 5th, 1971. My mother died on October 5th, 1981.
Whoa.
Yeah, so these are bizarre things that... and then in 1968, at age 2, there was a photograph taken. It was Christmas time, 1968. My sister and I were seated behind a toy piano. My sister's to my left, and to her far left is this very tall, looks to be 7 feet tall, hooded cloaked thing, black hooded cloaked thing. So that's 1968. In 1969, there was a photograph taken of me standing in front of like trees and bushes and all that stuff. Bizarre. It was like a dimensional doorway had opened at that very moment. And all these humanoid figures were behind me. There were other entities, including what looked to be like a lion's face over top of my head, and then a gray alien to my left, and then to the left of the gray alien, a Bigfoot looking type of face. So it was as if this doorway opened and all these different entities had manifested through. This was 1969 at age 3.
That's insane.
Yeah. So when you look back on all these things, you go, wow, this is, you know, I'm here for a reason. And God has placed me in this position for a reason. And I've had just about every type of supernatural paranormal experience that you can think of. And it is all for a reason.
That's insane. I tell you what, Bill, let's take a break. When we come back, I have a question for you. Sure. I want you to hold on to this through the break. it's this question. When you end up being a fighter or a warrior, does the fight ever stop? Do you ever get a respite from this fight, even if it's just for a brief moment? And once you enter this arena, is there ever a moment where you can just stop and breathe? It's an interesting question. I want you to hold on to it for just a moment. When we come back, we're going to ask our spiritual warrior, Bill Bean, that question. Once you start fighting, are you ever allowed to stop? Or is this a fight to the death? When we come back, we'll ask our guest that question. The book is Tales of an Exorcist. It's available right now in the link in the description of this, or the link is in the description of this podcast. By all means, click on that link, get the book during the break. When we come back, more with Bill Bean, spiritual warrior here on The Best in Paranormal Programming. This is Darkness Radio. Welcome back to The Best in Paranormal Programming. This is Darkness Radio. I'm Tim Dennis. Our guest is, you were once called the Deliverance Minister, Bill. We'll call you Spiritual Warrior, Bill Bean. We're going to start off with that question I asked at the end of the first segment, which is, Bill, once you start this fight, once you go down this road where you're going up against evil, once you're going up against the demonic, is there ever a respite? Because we know energy doesn't dissipate; it continues on. I got to think that you can get rid of a demon, but it's got to come back eventually. It's got to come back for round two, round three, round four. It's got to continue to make itself known. So, once you step into this ring, I got to think that there's no respite in this fight. Do you continue this fight to the death, or do you get a rest every once in a while?
It's one fall to a finish. And so there's no respite. I've got 21 stitches in my arm right now, Tim. I had some basal cell skin cancer removed and across my left forearm. And I get the stitches out tomorrow, thank God. Wow. But through all that, there was no respite. I've been more busy in this month of November than the entire year. This has been the busiest month of the year for some reason, but I am busy every single day. There's no respite. There's no stop. I can't even have my phone ringer on anymore because the continuous calls, text, emails. I try to get to everybody as quickly as I can. It's like trying to put a forest fire out with a garden hose. There's so many people in need. Praise God for working through me to help these people. Mm-hmm. But this is, and I have people that come to me from time to time and say, I want you to train me. I'll pay you. That people offer me significant amounts of money to train them. I said, no, unless this is a calling from God, then don't do it. Because once you enter into this arena, there's no respite or stepping back or, oh, I don't want to do this anymore. Like, you're Mark Mann. You're going to continue to do this. It's one fall to a finish. And and it's only by the power of God that I can do what I do. And I thank you and praise him for that. Otherwise, I'd have been dead a long time ago. And I say to people, you better pray and ask God if this is truly a calling from him. Otherwise, you're placing yourself in a situation that could be fatal. And so I think it's like anything, you know, people see certain people on TV or whatever, and they say, I can do that. That's easy. I can do that. They don't understand everything that's involved in this mm-hmm. and the amount of sacrifice that takes place. Thank God that my wife is understanding. She should have left me a long time ago because I'm so busy that, yeah, especially with the amount of travel. Before COVID, I was taking two trips a week all over America.
Oh, geez.
I'd come home for one trip and then be ready to go out for the next one. And then sessions in between that, whether it be a Skype or phone or whatever it may be. Just, I was so burned out, Tim, that I would wake up in hotel rooms in different places. And I go, where am I at right now? I didn't know where I was. It took a minute for me to understand what city or town I was in at that time. And so that's where you're getting into a dangerous area as well. When you start to get worn down to that point, and it was only by the power of God that I wasn't destroyed from that. I could have very easily had a heart attack, stroke, numerous types of things could have come on me to really knock me down. But God has kept me safe through it all. He's helped me to recharge. And I absolutely love people and care about people. I take the sufferings of others very personally and very seriously. Mm-hmm. And so I do anything and everything that I can to be there for them. But for the person that thinks that they could just step off the street and enter into this and do this, well, they'd be setting themselves up for disaster.
Let me ask you this, because I guess personal well-being, you just said it yourself. I mean, getting over basal cell cancer, the personal well-being is a very real concern. Father Andy Calder was a good friend of mine, mm-hmm. was a type 1 diabetic, ended up dying of complications of cancer at the end of his diabetes. I'm getting my ailments mixed up as I'm looking at you.
God bless him.
You know, at the end of his life, his feet were black, you know. We had a very close talk, he and I, at the end of his life. I mean, he had strokes.
I can understand it.
And I know he wouldn't have traded one day, one person he saved for any more breath of life. He did what he did because he loved and cared about people. He did what he did because he loved God. He did what he did in service of mankind. Mm-hmm. With that in mind, I'll ask you this question. Even in risk of personal harm to yourself, would you do anything different?
No, because this is what God chose me to do. And from the very first time, Tim, that I went out to help a family, and it was a very serious demonic situation. They were under siege. But I knew as soon as I arrived on the scene, it's like, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. And it's the greatest feeling to know what your purpose is in life. And I'm so thankful that God chose me to do this. So he's helped me to just continue. Like I said, this deal here, this isn't fatal, but what it is, it's aggressive in that if you let it go, it will really eat into your skin tissue. And then you're going to have some either not reconstructive surgery, but you would have to have skin grafts and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. to cover up. So this started out as like two little bumps on my forearm. And I thought, you know, that's really odd. I was stabbed in my forearm with a barbecue fork years ago. And and these two little bumps appeared right under those scars. And I thought, that is really odd. And I even popped them open at one point to treat them with alcohol and peroxide and all that. I thought, oh, it'll go away. It didn't go away. And so it was stayed on there for months. And then finally I said, I know I got a problem here. And I went, and sure enough, it was this basal cell skin cancer. Mm-hmm. I've had it before. This is the fourth time. So I've had it. I had it on my face over here a couple of years ago, and they had to do a surgical procedure there. Yep. I had it on my back, and I had it on my stomach at one time. And so this is the fourth time that I've gone through. So hopefully the last time.
Yeah.
But it's just amazing how these, and years ago, yes, I worked construction out in the sun. I played sports out in the sun, never any sunscreen. So I guess that's what's happening now from all the years of being exposed in the sun and getting burned like that. I don't do that anymore. Even on the hottest of summer days, I wear long sleeves. I don't hang out in the sun. Mm-hmm. But I guess, again, that's from years of that type of exposure. But I have to keep moving forward, and I have moved forward. You know, right before the surgery, I had to help a family of a lady in Jacksonville, Florida. Mm-hmm. I drove down there, 12-hour drive, went down, helped the lady. I got an hour and 46 minutes of sleep, went back to the hotel, ate, showered, changed my clothes, and back in my vehicle, up the road again, 12 plus hours on no sleep. And that is God. And I prayed before I left that hotel because I was already exhausted. I asked God, please help me. Please keep me awake. Don't let me fall asleep. And he did. And he got me through. I was exhausted when I got back, but I had to be back because I had a ton of other clients and cases So that's an example. And then a couple of days later, I had the surgery on my arm. And then I had to go help a family, a young lady in the Baltimore area. After that, you know, my arm was still pretty sore, but you can't think about, you know, my focus is helping people. So I don't think about my little problems that are going on or whatever. I'm driven and focused to help other people. And so that's just how it is. And that's how it will always remain. And that's supernatural in itself, Tim, because I couldn't do those things. It's not humanly possible to do some of the things that I have done without God working through me to keep me safe.
Well, God bless you, brother. But you, there also comes a time where you also have to take care of yourself. I mean, you know, you gotta, there's going to come a time where you do have to slow down for a moment and take care of yourself. So you are healthy enough to go help people as well.
No, it's true. It's a fine line. It really is. Yeah. But that's where, and so you understand this because of everything in childhood for me. And that's what continues to drive me and to give me that, I guess, ferocity.
Yeah.
I just can't stand to see people suffering in any way.
Right.
And I'll do anything that I can by the power of God working through me to help them.
Right. Absolutely. And I understand the passion and the fire you have there that you don't want to see people in pain and you want to help them. Mm-hmm. Understandable. Let's talk about one other subject too here, in that you don't want to see people in pain too. You also have to protect the household. Have you ever had issues where some of these things follow you home or attempt to try to follow you home? Have you had any of those instances in the past?
No, because I'll tell you right now, if during this interview, if 500 demons manifested right here, right now, I'd leap up from this chair and I would engage them. And the only way that I could do that is by the power of God working through me. It's not my power. Mm-hmm. It's the power of God working through me. And I would bind and rebuke and cast them out. And so here's something else that's very important for anybody out there that may be watching this and people that may be doing these kinds of things. When you are binding and rebuking and casting out demons, you want to ask God's, and God is a title. His name is Yahweh, listed 6,823 times in the Bible, replaced with the title of Lord. So where you see Lord in caps, I should say Yahweh. Jesus' Hebrew name is Yahshua, which means Yahweh saves. Yahweh saves through him. So you should always ask Yahweh to send his giant warrior angels to come and take those demons into custody. Because if you don't, they can jump into somebody else or go some other place in somebody else's home. I've seen this in the churches with these pastors that were binding and rebuking and casting out demons. And then they would jump into all the other people, you know, around. And that's why you have to be very careful and you have to make sure you're asking God to send those angels to take those demons into custody. And that way they can't jump into anybody else or anybody else's home or whatever it may be.
Yeah. Yeah. An important point. Yeah. Well, that's good. I mean, you know, I think one of the things, especially people who are in our audience, and this is one of the things I wanted to bring up with you too. We have people in our audience that are paranormal investigators that make the mistake of unintentionally bringing things home with them.
I've had many of those people contact me. I mean, some of the people on some of those shows have contacted me for help. You'd be surprised. How can I say this? I don't have anything against anybody. I mm-hmm. love people, but I do warn people about the dangers of going out there in these paranormal investigations. You don't know what doors you're opening. And it'd be like going to a beach where the sign is there saying, shark infested waters, beware of the sharks, don't swim here. But people get in anyway. Mm-hmm. Well, okay, if you get in anyway, you could do that by your free will, and you're free to do whatever you want to do, but there is going to be a consequence for that action. That's why the devil exists in the first place. He is the consequence for our actions because God gave us free will. Therefore, there has to be an adversary to mankind based on free will and the bad choice. That's why he exists. He fulfills a role. Mm-hmm. And so when we are engaging in the paranormal investigating and things of that nature, it's very, very dangerous. And a lot of these people do pick up these attachments because they're wide open. And the devil's number one tool is fear. So all life, Tim, operates on frequency and vibration. And this is because of Yahweh speaking the world into existence. If he did so by, and which I believe he did, by his voice, which is a frequency and vibration. Therefore, all life operates on that. And so if our frequency and vibration is on high, life is good, life is positive. Nobody has a perfect life. We all have a set of issues and challenges. That's life.
Sure.
However, if we're on high frequency and high vibration, life is good. We're moving forward. But if we're on low, life sucks. Mm-hmm. And it's always one problem, one drama, one situation, you know, it just snowballs one after the other. It's like the person has a black cloud over their head and it never changes. It just gets worse. That's what the devil's looking for. He wants to put people in positions and situations to where their frequency and vibration is on low, then they're wide open and susceptible for demonic attacks. So when people, some, go into these paranormal investigations, if something takes place, they hear a voice, they see, you know, an apparition, the noises, you know, whatever it may be, now they are put into a state of fear, confusion, and just really this hyper sensitive feeling to anticipation of what's going to happen next. That's bringing the person's frequency and vibration down on low, and it is making them wide open and susceptible for demonic attack. And that's how these attachments happen.
Clarify for our audience real quick at home, Bill. If someone's undergoing just an ordinary garden variety haunting, and the difference between that and a demonic haunting. I know we get contacted quite frequently as to whether that's just a haunting, or is it, you know, is it grandma who's hanging around and saying hi, or is this actually a demonic haunting? If somebody drops a dish, a spirit drops a dish off a shelf, or am I actually having a demonic haunting?
And I'm glad you asked this question, because there is a difference. And this is my best guess, because nobody has this answer except for God himself. Mm-hmm. However, biblically, scripturally, when Peter saw Jesus walking on the water, Jesus said to him, "Don't be afraid. It's me. I'm not a ghost. It's me." So that is clearly indicating through scripture that ghosts exist. So that's number one. Secondly, just as we have a soul, I believe there is a secondary life source within us. And so I would call it like a life essence. So when we pass, the soul departs, and perhaps this life essence stays on the planet and can manifest in a way of either apparition or some type of, you know, like you say, a dish or whatever it may be. It is possible. I do believe that there is this life essence that can remain on the planet. But here's the tricky thing. Mm-hmm. If in fact what I'm saying is true, then the devil knows how to manipulate this. And so I do believe that God allows our long lost loved ones to have contact with us, most specifically through dreams. And here for the last year or more, I've had many, many dreams of all my departed loved ones. They come to me in dreams. I had one just yesterday morning.
Okay.
And of my father. And I do believe that. And I do believe that's a form of contact. I also believe that God will allow them to come back and check in however they will. But the trick is, and the tricky part, is that the devil knows this, and he can assign, just as God assigns angels to us, the devil will assign demons. And he can have those demons look for openings like that, and then take the form and the shape and the voice and the likeness of that dearly departed loved one. It's called a familiar demonic spirit that can do this. So this is where spiritual discernment comes in and a testing of the spirit. So again, right now, if my mother or father, whoever appeared in front of me right now, I would test the spirit. And the way to test the spirit would be, I would say, "Yahweh rebuke thee in Jesus' name, depart." And if it suddenly departed, then I knew it was a demonic familiar spirit taking the form. If not, if it stayed, then it is your loved one. Furthermore, you could feel the difference. The devil can't disguise this. When something divine is taking place, I've had many divine angelic encounters, and I thank God for that. Mm-hmm. You can feel the love, you can feel the peace, you can feel the protection, you can feel the empowerment. Well, it's the flip side with a demonic type of thing. Even if it is, you know, taking the form and the shape of a loved one, you can still feel the negativity, the fear, the evil. Sometimes a terrible smell will be accompanied with that, and ringing of the ears. So there's an atmospheric change that is demonic.
Okay.
And so it all comes down to having spiritual discernment. And I pray each and every day of my life that God keeps me strong in mind, body, and spirit. And I have that strong spiritual discernment to know who is who, what is what, who's true, who's not, what's real, what is not. And what, if it's some type of spiritual encounter, you know, what is it? Is it from him or is it from the enemy?
Interesting. Okay. You mentioned earlier in the program that when working in different homes, not only in working in different homes, actually I'd read that in the book, but you'd mentioned yourself having the experience of seeing a portal open and seeing an alien, not a UFO, but an alien, and seeing Bigfoot.
Yeah.
I want to get into it a little bit about that. And talk a little bit about that portal in that opening and what you believe or where you believe aliens and Bigfoot come from then through that portal, or what accesses that portal and where they're coming from.
That's another great question. Boy, you really got some good stuff here, Tim. Good questions.
I'm probing a little bit here, Bill. So what is this portal access? If this portal isn't accessing just strictly hell, what is it accessing, or what is it opening to?
All right. So I've written 10 books, and in two of my books, Stranger Than Fiction and Stranger Than Fiction 2, I connect the dots, because as I stated earlier in the interview, I've had just about every type of paranormal, supernatural experience you can imagine. These things are all connected. And so I've had many divine experiences and many demonic experiences as well. Mm-hmm. The experiences involving UFOs go all the way back to 1977 as a young child. I was, what was I, 9 or 10? Let's see. I was born in 66. I think I was 11 years old.
Okay.
77. My dad had come back for a visit from Florida. And that was the first UFO sighting that I had. My family had that with me over that house in Herondale. Mm-hmm. And, since that time, I'd say January 1995, I started having visitations from these unidentified flying objects and non-human looking beings. Black copters, black vans, you name it. It all came together with that. And at first I thought, it's got to be a case of mistaken identity. Who are these people? What do they want with me? And it really affected my mind greatly, because the stress in wondering what this was all about. I started documenting all this stuff in October of 1995. As a matter of fact, on the anniversary of my mother's death, October 5th, 1995, was the first UFO photo that I'd taken. Since that time, you know, I've taken probably over 1,000 UFO photos. I'd shot over 16 hours of video footage. These things were coming to me, Tim. I didn't choose to come to them.
Wow.
Huh. So now we go back to the Bible. And Psalm 68:17 says the chariots of God are 20,000. Why would Yahweh have these craft? Why? I don't know. Only he knows.
Okay.
But it says in the scripture, the chariots of God are 20,000. So I believe that when Satan and a third of the angels were cast out of heaven, the B'nai Elohim, the sons of God, they were cast down in those flying chariots, which I believe they're flying Merkaba chariots. And then when they came down here to the earth, they became flying Vimana chariots that the devil and his minions were using. They had sex with human women, produced a hybrid offspring of giants called the Nephilim. The Nephilim went into the forest and the woods and had unnatural sex acts with the beasts of the field, ate apes, bears, dogs, wolves, you name it. Mm-hmm. And that is the Bigfoot, Sasquatch, Sabe creatures. They are every bit as much a spiritual creature as they are a flesh and blood creature. And they are the offspring of the offspring. So it ties all together. And so when you connect the dots like this, mm-hmm. it's very interesting, because not only did the Nephilim, I believe, when Yahweh created the Great Flood, I think some of those Nephilim were able to get into those flying craft and escape to places like Mars and other. That's why they have monuments and statues and everything on Mars, mm-hmm. because I believe that they were there for a time.
Okay.
Came back when the floodwaters receded and then kept that line going. And so I believe 100% that all of this phenomena is connected. And in many of my cases, the victim has not only had the demonic aspects, but also the UFO aspect and the Bigfoot aspect as well, and other creatures, cryptids or Mothman or whatever. They have had these types of things involved in their cases. And so that's what led me to write the two books, connecting the dots. But I'm firmly convinced of it, Tim, that it is all very, very much connected. And so these portals, which are dimensional doorways, they're used by Yahweh's angels. They're used by demons. They're used by these otherworldly beings. And I really believe that in the vastness of the universe that Yahweh created, certainly there's other life out there. We're not the only ones. Why? It wouldn't make any sense that we would...
Right.
You know, this little speck in the, and then when you look at the bigger picture, we're very tiny and minute compared to that. So you're going to tell me that he just created us and just left everything else null and void? I don't think so. So perhaps these other beings come from other planets or places, and some are in line with God. And others are not. So in my opinion, and this is strictly my opinion, because I don't pretend to have all the answers, nobody does. Mm-hmm. I think, especially in our world today and in America, I think that the devil has these underlings that he gives the directive to. Call them reptilians, whatever you want to call them. But I believe that's what they are.
Okay.
And they give the directive to the power elite on this earth. So the devil gives them the message, and then they give the message to the power elite. And this is why our world is so upside down and backwards, because of what's taking place. There was a movie that came out in 1987 or 1988 by Rowdy Piper called They Live.
Yeah, familiar.
That movie's more true than people understand. And I think that's what's happening here in our world today, especially in America. I think there are beings walking around that might look human that are not entirely human. And that might sound like crazy talk to some people, but I assure you, in all the circles that I've been in life and everything that I've encountered, the truth truly is stranger than fiction.
Well, if we take it one more step to the right, do you believe in the alien human hybrid process then, and that maybe they're trying to create another type of master race that way?
I do believe it, and my conclusion on that is demonic, and that it is the devil who's been given this short time to have his reign. He wants to recreate the world in his image, after his likeness, after his God. I think that's what's going on there, Tim.
And is that just his way of corrupting the human soul as an affront to God?
Yep, absolutely. So he is, and this goes all the way back to the book of Job, to where the devil, Hasatan, Satan, he checks in. Now think about this. He checks in with God, and he still does. He checks in with God, and Yahweh says to him, "Where have you been?" He says, "I've been roaming the earth, to and fro, up and down the earth, in the dry places." Okay, mm-hmm. So he's checked in with God. He's telling God where he's been. And then he says, "You know, I can turn your most loyal and faithful servant, Job, against you, and I can get him to curse you." And Yahweh said, "Okay, you could do anything except for kill him. and he put Job through hell and killed family members, and Job lost all his money and pretty much lost everything. Had these sores come up all over his body, and but he never cursed God. He never turned against him. He kept his faith. Even when his wife said, "Why don't you just curse God and die?" And he said, "Be silent, woman. I'll never curse God." And so he withstood all of it, and God rewarded him twofold. But I think that's what's happening here is, and when you look biblically again, the account of Jesus in the wilderness for 40 days, and the devil comes to him to try and tempt him when he's out there, and he takes him. Now think about this, Tim.
Okay.
Who or what could take the Son of God, the Christ, the chosen anointed one, the Savior that God works through? Who could take him anywhere? Well, the devil took him. It took him to a pinnacle, a high place. How could you take somebody, again, that's the Son of God, you take him, and you're taking him to a high place that's showing him the whole world and saying, if you get down and worship me on your knees right now, it's all yours. Who could do that? I'll tell you who could do that. Somebody who thought that the world was their birthright, that it was so. This is going to sound crazy, and I might get some hate mail for this, but I'm going to share what I believe is true.
Sure.
I believe that Yahweh created the devil first. I believe that he held a very lofty and high position in heaven as a choir director. He was a beautiful creature with jewels, and God even put pipes inside of him as part of the praise and worship music to him. Then he created Yahshua, Jesus, the Melchizedek. Melchizedek means high priest.
Mm-hmm.
He created him, and then the jealousy started right there. Why? Because that was his brother. The devil was his older brother, and that's how the devil could come and take his younger brother, take him up to a pinnacle, a high place in a UFO, to see the whole world and say, if you get on your knees now, worship me, it's all yours. Why? Because I think it's my birthright and I could give it to you. Biblically, again, we see Jacob and Esau. Jacob lost his birthright for a bowl of soup. Says the same theme that repeats itself. So in my opinion, that's what happened, is that the devil, and he still feels that it's his birthright, this world. He hates mankind. And so he wanted to have control over Jesus,
mm-hmm.
and certainly mankind, because he hates mankind. He wants this world to be his world, and in his image, after his likeness, after his kind. So he is the rebellious son. He is the original liar. He is the original salesman. He's the master mimic, and his demons are just like him. And so God, Yahweh, has allowed him to continue to exist because he fills a role and a purpose because of free will that mankind has. So you won't get this in any of the churches. I assure you of that. They're not going to teach you any of this.
Mm-hmm.
And some would vilify me for saying this, but I'd rather know and speak the truth any day than to be fed a cookie cutter version of.
Understandable. Understandable. Wow.
So there you go.
Yeah.
You're getting stuff now that you never got before in any of our interviews, other interviews.
Right, right. No, you kind of hit me with the fire hose here, brother. That's for sure.
Yeah.
That's for sure. That's interesting. It's kind of an interesting perspective, too, in that, well, you kind of blew my mind with the alien and Bigfoot stuff. I'm not going to lie. In that when we put it all together in that package, or we connect the dots, as you say, I think we try to understand aliens and Bigfoot in a way. And not only that, but when you connect it to when you connect it to Satan, or you connect it to a devilish perspective, it makes sense why these are not familiar creatures, or these are not creatures that we should be getting along with, or we have negative experiences with them more than we have positive experiences with them.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's not to say that there aren't beings out there that would have a non-human looking form that wouldn't be in line with God, because there are some. Mm-hmm. And the same thing with the Bigfoot Sabe creatures. There are those out there that are absolutely sinister. Some eat people. I'm sorry to say that, but it's true. Mm-hmm. But others, for some reason, seem to be more gentle and more loving towards mankind, or just absolutely evasive to where they don't even want any contact with mankind. So it's interesting how that works. And again, that works in the biblical sense as well, because you had men of God, some of the most favored men of God, but then had offspring that were cursed. People like Ham, who was the cursed son of Noah. And then he had a son named Cush, the dark one, who had a son named Nimrod. And Nimrod was one of the most wicked individuals that walked the face of the earth. Mm-hmm. And no, I'm sorry, Cush. It was Cush, Ham, Cush, and Cain. I'm sorry, Cain came from the line of, so Cain comes from the line of Noah. And so Cain came in as a result of Cush, the dark one. Cain is the one that wanted to be worshiped as God. Mm-hmm. Cain built the Tower of Babel, and Cain was worshiped as God. And so, of course, we know that Cain slew his brother Abel.
Right. Yep.
And so in that, Seth was brought forward. Seth means substitute. Mm-hmm. So Cain was absolutely, of course, he was banished from the garden. And this is another interesting thing, Tim. This is mind-blowing as well. So after Cain slew his brother Abel, Yahweh came to him and said, you're out of here. You're not in the garden anymore because you've done this to your brother. And he says, well, wait a minute. You can't send me out of here. If you send me out there, they will kill me. Who are they? It's telling you that there's others that are not mentioned. He says, if you put me out there, if you put me out of the garden, they're going to kill me. Who are they? So that's mind blowing in itself. Who are they? Who's these other people that God created? So again, he went on to build the Tower of Babel, but Nimrod is from that lineage as well. And Nimrod was just absolutely horrible. He was known as the mighty hunter. Mm-hmm. And Nimrod was a giant. He was one of these, Nephilim. And so Nimrod wanted to be worshiped as God. Anybody that didn't worship him as God, they were slain. And Nimrod was eventually assassinated by his uncle Shem and 70 other men. They killed him and cut him up into pieces. Nimrod married his wife, mother, Samarius. And she was in the forest one day, and she said that she came across this stump that she'd always seen. And one day she's there, and she says that this stump grew into the form of evergreen tree, that it remanifested, it was reborn. And they said that was Nimrod, born again, and he became Baal, the sun god. So this is how all this ties in: Babylonian mystery religion worship and all these different things, but they all tie in together. And Bigfoot is mentioned in the Bible as hairy satyrs and lion men of Moab, and other mentions about them being slain. And UFOs are mentioned 70 times in the Bible, 70 different scriptures they are mentioned in there. And so it's all there. So the book of Jasher, which is not in the Bible, mm-hmm. Was one of the books rejected, talks about the lion men of Moab and the hairy satyrs. It's all that I wrote about this in my, two Stranger Than Fiction books. It's all there, Tim. The information is there. But unfortunately, in today's world, it's such a fast-paced world, there's so many different things going on, people cannot grasp knowledge, and they don't thirst for it anymore. And God says in Hosea 4:6, my people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. And so that's what's going on in today's world. The devil has created all these things to make things so fast paced to where people's attention spans are virtually non-existent, and they're not thirsting for knowledge anymore. But knowledge is power.
That's true. It's very true. It is. Bill, let's in closing, I want to bring this up because it was something that in your book that I found refreshing. It's something that I know I'm going to adopt into my daily regimen, and something that I already started on a day or two ago. And that is, you have a series of prayers to bring into your life that really, I think, help jumpstart your day. And I know that there's a certain let's just say, section of our audience that may not necessarily be denominational. I know you're non-denominational, and I know mm-hmm. people that may want to come to you that are having issues in their life may say, well, is Bill one denomination or not? I know you're non-denominational when it comes to needing help if they are being oppressed or have a need for you. But at the end of the book, you do have a series of, tell people the series of prayers that you have available for them and what they are, what it is that I'm talking about here.
It's very empowering, Tim. And for me, in my life, I have a routine and I have a real and authentic relationship with God. Mm-hmm. And as part of that, I have to maintain my end of it. My end is giving him constant praise and thanks, having constant communication and dialogue through prayer. So the first thing that I do when I open my eyes every single day is I thank God and praise God for the day. Life is a gift. We are not promised tomorrow, so we should be thankful for every day. And then I get on my knees and pray. And I've set my day up for success because I have invoked the power of God over my life. Oftentimes, I don't get to bed before 6:30 a.m. And no matter how tired I am, I say a spiritual warfare prayer every single morning and a daily victory prayer. I declare victory in each and every day of my life and will continue to do so for the rest of my life. Why? Because if God's with me and for me, then nothing's going to stand against me. If I'm committed to God, then I'm committed to excellence. If I'm committed to excellence, then I refuse to lose. Doesn't mean my life's perfect. But I'll tell you this. God transformed my life and saved me from a life that I was seeking death. Saved me, transformed me, and has given me a life that I wouldn't trade my life with anybody's life on this planet. And I'm very, very thankful to him for it. So there is power in those prayers. And it is all about being real with God, and being real with yourself. And if you can establish a real and authentic relationship with God by saying these prayers, you will see your life won't become perfect, but I'll guarantee you one thing, you'll start to see blessings coming into your life and you will see improvements in your life because you're invoking the power of God over your life every single day.
Exactly. You know what? I was going to tell you, Bill, before we started the program, I didn't get a chance to mention it to you that I was saying prayers at night. I was praying to, you had mentioned in your book that you were doing an Our Father. I was doing one of those. I was doing a Hail Mary. I was doing, and then I was doing St. Michael's prayer. And in that, then I would say a prayer to St. Michael, or I would talk to St. Michael, talk to Mother Mary, talk to Jesus. So those are the three things I would do at night before I go to bed. Those are the, you know, but then as I was reading your book and, you know, talking about a sinner's prayer, a spiritual warfare prayer, then you have seven declarations, which I really like as well, which are like,
glad you're bringing that up, Tim.
Yeah. Those are very much affirmations or declarations, which are very powerful. You know, I don't think people realize how words can really steer your life. They can really psychologically, not just necessarily on an internal level, but an external level, can really steer your ship and get you moving in the right direction.
It's true. It's absolutely true. And so we always want to say good words and good things and affirmations and declarations to invoke the power of God over our lives. However, the flip side is when, you know, you were children and your parents said, don't you say those curse words. And they really are curse words. There are certain words that you could say that will invoke curses and negativity and bad things. So there is a flip side to this. And we always want to be on the right side. And furthermore, Tim, I wouldn't dare call myself a prophet or say that I know when the last day is before this all comes down. But I will say this, based on what we're seeing in the world, and especially in America, I firmly believe that we are in the last days. And if that's true, then we want to be on the right side with God. We don't want to get caught on the wrong side. That's for sure. I don't want to see anybody damned to hell and left behind.
Right. And then there's one other prayer that I really like, and that's a daily victory prayer. And you really got to believe that you are winning at life. Whether you feel like you are or not, You got to, I mean, there's no team that goes out on the field that isn't going to believe that they're going to win that day.
Yep.
You really got to believe that when you wake up in the morning, you put your feet on the floor, that you're going to win today.
That's right.
That no matter what you're doing that day, you're going to win. And, you know, there's no athlete that hits the field that doesn't believe that God's on their side.
That's right.
And I know there's some people that may roll their eyes and go, oh, okay, every athlete thanks God. Yeah, what is God doing on the field for them? It doesn't matter. You know, it doesn't matter what you think.
We're on a bigger playing field.
That's right.
It's the playing field of life.
That's right.
And God does plenty, and we should really be thankful for what God does for us. So be grateful. Be grateful for everything. Don't fret about what you don't have. Be thankful for what you do have. And so I've also said that in life, which I have been knocked down 1,000 times, if you're knocked down 1,000 times, get up 1,001.
That's right.
You have to keep getting back up.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, it's funny because I have a lot of people ask me, well, wow, you've been through so much, Tim. And I know, Bill, you've been through so much. One of the things that's in the book, and I never say I'm lucky, and I say I'm fortunate. I've had more than just me on my side.
That's right.
You know, I've always been blessed. I never say I always say I'm blessed. I've been blessed with so much that I've been able to get through so much. You know,
there's no such thing as luck. There's no such thing as coincidence. Everything means something, and everything is for a reason.
Because there's something that you detail in the book, and it was an on the job accident you had. You don't tell people what happened, because you don't get through this by normal means.
I know people that fell 15 feet to their death.
Yeah.
So this was I think it was 1988. I was working construction for a company called PDI. And our job was working on these salt domes for the state of Maryland. And we were about 50 feet up. And my friend Frank and I were on a little 2x6 plank that was on roof jacks that were nailed into the structure. And it was a very windy day. It was a sunny and windy day, and we had to remove these 8-foot sheets of plywood from the structure to replace them and then eventually put the shingles back on. And it was during the course of this, we're removing this piece of plywood, 8-foot sheet, and the wind caught it and knocked us both back. We lost our balance, and then I moved inward to try and brace myself, and it was on a 1x3 piece of the structure, and it was rotted, and I went right through. And I remember saying, oh no, that, and everything was happening so fast, but yet it was happening in slow motion.
Yeah.
And on the way down, I wiped out this big aluminum ladder that was sort of braced against the inner wall of the structure. I hit that, bounced off of that, and then landed. It was a very small amount of road salt in the bottom of that, inside of that structure. And I landed on my backside in that, everything jammed up, man. I should have had a broken neck, or I mean, my teeth, I should have shattered my teeth out too, because everything just jammed together. And I laid there for a minute, and all the guys came rushing down. They're saying, don't move, we're calling an ambulance. I was so stunned, Tim, and I was so afraid that I was, you know, really significantly injured. Mm-hmm. That I sat up, and then a couple minutes later, I got up. Now, that's a miracle from God. Not only did I get up, 15 minutes later, I went back up there and went to work, and my knees were shaking.
I bet.
I was never the same again for heights after that. I had nightmares for several weeks about falling. And you tell me, if that's not a miracle, I don't know what is, because I should have been dead. At mm-hmm. least should have had, you know, broken neck or broken bones, teeth shattered out, something. There was nothing wrong. I had a bruise that went down the left side of my body from wiping out that ladder. That was it. Now tell me that's not God.
That's a miracle, my friend.
There is no way. I know people, again, I know people that fell to their death from 15 feet. I had an uncle that was on a ladder that slipped off that ladder, went 10 feet down, shattered his heels, and everything. He was never the same. He's no longer with us, but he had major damage just from that little, you know, amount of height there,
yep,
coming down on his heels like that. So it was truly miraculous. I can never thank God and praise God enough. Tim, I've had guns pulled on me. I disarmed a gunman that had fired two shots. He had the gun to the back of the head of this guy. And that was when I was in the bar business. I worked as a bouncer and manager of security in those nightclubs for 22 years. I could write a book just on those experiences. Mm-hmm. But I disarmed a gunman one night, I believe it was in 2002. And that was a miracle in itself, because I could have very easily been shot. The individual that the gunman had the gun to, he could have been shot. God kept everybody safe. Another guy tried to slash my face. I disarmed him with a knife. He tried to then tried to stab me in my femoral artery in my leg. Other guy pulled a gun on me, another knife attack, somebody that, and even being a spiritual warrior, I've been in life-threatening situations with guns, knives, people trying to bite me, people hitting me, spitting on me. You just wouldn't believe it. I've been through all these types of things, and God has kept me safe and kept me in control of the situation. That's the key. When you're in these types of situations, it doesn't get any more high level of stress than that, because your life's on the line. And you still have to remain in control of the situation. And God has helped me to be able to do that in all of these cases, except for the fall. I had no control over that. But these other things that I was involved in, I was able to always maintain control of the situation. And I'm thankful to God for it.
So I just want to remind people, as they get up in the morning, put those feet on the floor, there's unlimited potential. Unlimited potential. There's always a miracle out there waiting for you.
Love that.
When you get up in the morning, anything's possible. Anything can happen. And just believe. That's it.
I love that, Tim. God makes the impossible possible. In this last couple minutes of the interview, for those of you out there watching, you're clearly hearing this right now. There's no fabrication or embellishment or exaggeration in anything that I've just said. It happened just as I've said it, just as it happened. And so these are miracles from God. So when we place our faith and trust in Him, again, life is not going to become perfect, but I guarantee you life will become blessed. And if God's with you and for you, then He's going to make the impossible possible.
One thing I do want to thank you for, Bill, is over the years here on Darkness Radio, people who have needed help, we've referred them to you, and you've been very swift in helping them.
And I thank you for that too, Tim, and I thank you guys in the book for that, because you don't realize that you're indirectly saving and helping people. So when you make that connection and God's going to work through me to help these people, this is win-win, and you're doing your part as an agent for God in making a connection to help and to help save these people.
Well,
so thank you.
Our role is very little, my friend, but the appreciation and thanks goes to you. I bring that up just to ask you how, if someone is in need and somebody does need your help, how do they get a hold of you?
Yeah. And if you're out there, and again, Tim, I want to thank you so much for having me. I've enjoyed being with you, brother, and look forward to the next time.
Absolutely.
And for everybody out there watching, thank you for watching, and God bless all of you. And if you're out there and you're in need, you're going through a terrible time in your life, or you feel like you are absolutely under some type of oppression, or if you have someone that you know or a loved one that feels under possession, reach out. BillBeamWarrior.com. You can email me directly from the site. We will get back to you. It'll be either me or my assistant, Melinda, that will get back to you as quickly as possible. And just know that there is somebody out there that cares about you. I don't even know who you are, but if you come to me with your story, I'm going to care about you instantly, and I'll do everything that I can by the power of God working through me to help you. So BillBeamWarrior.com. Send a message, and same thing, if you want to get a copy of the book, Tales from an Exorcist, BillBeamWarrior.com. You can order it from Amazon as well, but if you want a personalized signed copy from me, you can order it from the site.
Sounds good. Bill, I want to thank you so much for joining us today.
All right, my brother. God bless you and your family. Looking forward to the next time.
Absolutely.
And may God just continue to bless you in all of your ways, and we'll talk soon.
Sounds good. Thank you so much, Bill, and God bless you as well. Folks, I want to thank you so much for joining us this week. I want to thank our sponsor, Microdose Gummies, for sponsoring us this week here on the program. I want to remind you to take care of yourself and each other this week. Again, we are in the holiday season, but you don't necessarily need the holiday season to help one another. It's real simple, folks. If you see somebody out there in need, just take a few dollars or a few moments of your time to help someone who's in need out there, or help somebody through an organization. Take a few dollars and help somebody who may need a winter coat or may need a meal or may need shelter. We're all in need out there right now. It's a tough time of the year, especially with the economic conditions and whatnot. People are struggling with a lot of things right now. So just take that time to help a fellow neighbor. You don't necessarily need a holiday to do it, but we are in the winter season now. So we are all need each other, and be that light in somebody's life this weekend. Do it for your buddies here at Darkness Radio, if that's what you need. I want to thank Mally Fox as well for filling in for Beer City Bruiser. Beer City Bruiser will be back next week here on the program. And again, Mally, thank you so much. We love you. Thank you for filling in for Beer City Bruiser this week. Folks, we'll be back next week with a brand new lineup of shows. And we appreciate you so much for joining us here on the best in paranormal programming. This has been Darkness Radio.